everyone. Thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices. I'm Joanna Hernandez. Here's what we're looking at. Trump's DEI crackdown hit schools. They're under pressure to cut diversity programs or lose federal funding. A look at the potential impact. How mass deportations could affect the local restaurant industry.
It's like our job to open the door and then hold it open for these other kids to come through.
And inside a local organization helping teens tell their stories. And now to some of today's top stories. People who were shot at the 2022 4th of July parade in Highland Park will be allowed to attend the trial of the alleged gunmen. That's after a Lake County judge granted prosecutors' motion today, allowing any victim who is set to testify against Robert Cremo III to remain in court throughout the entirety of this trial. Cremo is facing more than 100 charges, including first-degree murder. More than 50 people were shot at the parade, including seven who were killed. Cremo's trial is set to begin next week. He's pled not guilty. A controversial pipeline replacement project is set to move forward. The Illinois Commerce Commission today ruled the program by Peoples Gas can continue after being halted more than a year ago, so the ICC could determine how to move forward after the project was years behind schedule and billions of dollars over budget. However, regulators are requiring the utility to prioritize high-risk pipes, create a safety monitor to track the company's progress, and finish the work in 10 years. Last year, the consumer advocacy group Citizens Utility Board released a report that the program could lead to consumers seeing their gas bills double by the year 2040. Peoples Gas denounced the findings as riddled with false claims. Today's decision does not have an immediate effect on consumers' bills, according to state regulators. The deadline to get your real ID is less than 3 months away, so here's what you need to know. Beginning May 7th, individuals who want to fly domestically will have to have a valid passport or obtain a real ID. A real ID is not required to drive, vote, or prove citizenship. To get a real ID, you have to provide proof of identity, like a birth certificate, a passport, or certificate of naturalization. You'll also need your Social Security card or something with the full number, like a W-2 or pay stub. Also required are two documents showing your current residency, like a utility bill, bank statement, or rental agreement. And finally, you'll have to provide proof of signature, like a credit card or current driver's license. You can make an appointment ahead of time at a DMV facility. Up next, what college classrooms might look like without federal funding. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
School systems and universities across the country are facing an ultimatum: eliminate their diversity programs or lose federal funding. In a letter on Friday, the Department of Education gave school systems and universities 2 weeks to get rid of programs focusing on diversity, equity, and inclusion, or known as DEI. Supporters of the order say it's an effort to get schools to follow laws against discrimination. But advocates worry that support for students of color could get cut. Here with more are what the potential impact are Hilda Miranda Wolf, CEO of Ethos, a DEI consulting firm, and Jeffrey Schwab, senior counsel at Liberty Justice Center, a nonpartisan litigation firm. Now, thank you both for joining us. I want to start off, as mentioned, the Trump administration is giving schools a deadline to eliminate these DEI programs. Jeffrey, you know, what was your first reaction to this?
Well, I think in the main, the letter just reiterates current law that racial discrimination in universities is illegal. And it emphasizes that the Trump administration is interested in enforcing it in response to the 2023 Supreme Court case, Students for Fair Admissions versus Harvard. And that case held that Title VI and the Equal Protection Clause made affirmative action programs illegal and unconstitutional. So in the main, the letter just says that the Trump administration is going to make sure that that law is enforced.
Alida, what are your thoughts?
Along the same lines, it is a broad and general statement. And when we think about higher education institutions, they're really awaiting guidance on what will follow as a result of this letter. So we have 8 days to see what this will actually mean. But I think it's in keeping with what this administration overall has taken as its position, which is an anti-DEI agenda.
And talking about that, what types of programs could be impacted under this order?
So if they are adhering closely to the Supreme Court ruling, we would only be looking at admissions when we're thinking about colleges or higher education. But the letter itself is much broader and encompasses everything from kindergarten to middle school, high school, and state agencies that are in the education space. So it could mean a lot of different things based on the language in the letter itself. It could mean multicultural programs. It could mean mentorship programs. It could mean graduation events that are targeted at specific groups. It could mean a variety of access programs that are tied to racial identity, ethnic identity, or national origin.
And Jeffrey, research has shown students of color are often underrepresented in higher education. You know, what are the potential issues with academic support programs exclusively designed for specific groups?
Well, I think it's important to note that that the goals of education and inclusion are not necessarily mutually exclusive with the Supreme Court's decision in the Students for Fair Admissions case. If we're concerned about people that are underrepresented in schools, in universities, there's a variety of other avenues that we can take. We can focus on people of limited means, and if people of limited means is overrepresented in certain racial groups, then in theory that would help those racial groups. And also we can focus on things like school choice, allowing kids that are in K through 12 education to not be limited to their schools and have the opportunity to have schools outside. And that hopefully would allow them a better opportunity to learn and get into colleges that they prefer.
And Alida, what do you say to some who think that academic programs should just be based on merit and not consider race?
So I think that fundamentally ignores the other elements of being part of a campus environment or a school environment. When we think about multicultural centers, one of my colleagues in this space, Daniel Matamoros, who studied at Loyola in terms of getting his PhD, looked at permanent residents. And one of the things that he noted was that they were less likely to feel a sense of belonging on campus because of a lack of shared cultural identities, and that programming that was specifically geared towards, let's say, a pan-Hispanic identity helped them feel more integrated into the campus community. It also gave them access to resources and tools that they wouldn't have had available to them. And I think when we are considering Latino students in particular, we have to also consider that using lesser means or low income as a proxy ignores some really important challenges like language, for example. A lot of these programs that are supposed to be in this category of race or national origin or ethnicity actually highlight language, make sure that materials are translated into languages. Some of the arguments about these graduation events have been a challenge too, because those have been done in a bilingual fashion, which has been important in terms of really bringing the community of these students into the fold.
Jeffrey, what are your thoughts on what she's saying?
Well, I don't think that, I guess what I would say is it is unclear what the Trump administration, how they will enforce it. They did promise that sometime in the future they would provide further guidance. And so it's not clear whether the enforcement mechanisms will be against things like language-based learning, things like that. It doesn't seem to me that that necessarily violates the Supreme Court's decision in Students for Fair Housing. But it also is important to note that this is the Supreme Court's decision in Students for Fair Housing. That's the law. That's how they interpret the law. And I think many people can agree that in recent response to, I think, Vice President Vance, that we shouldn't get to pick and choose which Supreme Court cases we're going to follow based on whether we like the outcome or not.
And I want to bring, you know, something else up, a report from the Latino Civil Rights Agency, Unidos U.S., says The large number of students who at some point consider taking leaves of absence from school demonstrates the impact of various barriers. Our study found that 66% of Latino college students consider leaving school at some point, and that 34 actually did leave. Jeffrey, without programs to support students of color in school, how do we eliminate those barriers to entry and retention, especially in higher education, would you say?
Well, I mean, I don't have all the answers, but I think there are ways that are not race-based that can focus on helping students that are having trouble. I don't think that the race-based thing would prevent things like helping people that speak a different language as their first language. I think that would be perfectly consistent with the Supreme Court's case. So I think there's lots of ways other than just focusing on race and racial discrimination that can help people of all different backgrounds and that are struggling with their educational opportunities.
Alita, what do you make of this?
My concern is that there are already precedents established. So if we look at the University of Texas at Austin, the response last year based on state level requirements meant that their multicultural center closed, and Monarch, which was their center specifically focused on undocumented students, closed, and that avenue to access, to resources, to support, which, by the way, both of those centers were not closed off to people of different groups, but there was such a fear of losing federal funding and state funding, and there was such a desire to align to a certain agenda that we had students who were counting on a support system that then was removed. And so what I think about a letter like this is, again, not sure that it's going to lead to everything that is broadly defined in the letter, but that institutions are going to be afraid of losing their funding and pause programs that students are using right now and using to great effect.
Are you already seeing that there's been universities or schools changing their wording?
We're seeing, at least at Ethos, we consult with a number of universities, what we're seeing is that their programs are on pause. So they're very concerned, not knowing what's going to happen in the future. And so our directors of, for example, one of our directors of the Multicultural Center has completely suspended the programming calendar through the end of February, waiting for February 28th to roll around, because there's also concerns about job loss and whether they're going to lose their staff if they take a wrong step.
And Jeffrey, we only have a couple seconds, but I want to ask, do you think it's fair to put schools under such a tight constraint to comply with these new rules?
I think it's worthwhile noting that it's been under regulation that it's been the policy of the United States government to not immediately take away funding for violations, but to consult with hoping for voluntary compliance. And I would imagine that the Trump administration would follow those regulations.
Well, thank you both. I guess we'll have to see what happens next.
Thank you.
Up next, deportation threats facing the restaurant industry. The U.S. restaurant industry relies on the labor of undocumented immigrants. But in the wake of President Donald Trump's mass deportation orders, some Illinois restaurant owners are raising concerns. Joining us now with more are Sam Sanchez, founder of Third Coast Hospitality Group and a board member of the National Restaurant Association. And joining us via Zoom is Jaime De Paulo, president and CEO of the Illinois Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Thank you both for joining us. Jaime, I want to start with you straight off the bat. Have you been aware of any restaurant raids in Chicago since Trump started his term in office?
Well, not necessarily raids, but I've been aware of several restaurant owners being deported and a chef being deported for one of the while he was working.
Yes. What are your thoughts about that? You're talking about restaurant owners.
Yeah, restaurant owners, they were just a casualty. I had to order them a friendship with another individual, and they happened to be there with that individual, so they just took them. So they had to shut down the business because they did not have the proper documents in place so they can stay in business. And that's the reason why the Illinois Hispanic Chamber of Commerce launched a tool that can help business owners actually, you know, so they can operate their business from abroad. For example, a power of attorneys. Make sure the signature of the banks are the correct ones. Make sure you got the proper legal advice and so on and so forth. So this is a free tool for anybody, even the restaurant or business owners that are here in Illinois. They need to protect themselves and be ready just in case something happens.
And talking about that tool, I actually want to bring it up. You, just as you mentioned, you launched a free program to help undocumented business owners and their employees be prepared in case they face deportation. Some of the points are legal preparedness, including power of attorney, regulatory compliance, financial access protection, and employee preparedness. You know, can you just continue to discuss this initiative and what restaurants can do to protect themselves in case they are facing, you know, these ICE raids?
Yeah, for example, if a restaurant owner gets deported or gets arrested by deportation, there's the proper document in place so they can leave the restaurant to the spouse or wife or husband or to the manager so they can operate the restaurant from abroad. We've seen tools that can do that, and we need to educate our community. For example, QuickBooks Online, they can literally operate the business from abroad. You just need to find the proper banking institution that's going to allow you to do that, and there's many banks that do that. So that's the kind of very simple stuff, but you need to be ready.
Sam, I want to bring you in. What are your thoughts on the program?
Jaime, thank you. And I'll tell you something. The Hispanic Chamber of Commerce is amazing. There's over 140,000 business owners, Latino-owned business owners in the state of Illinois. So, I mean, having that ability to be able to transfer the responsibility to your manager, your spouse, your children, or just a best friend that can continue running the business, the idea is to continue. They have the jobs available for the community and that we don't lose jobs. A business that goes out of business and closes, is forced to close, is jobs lost, taxable revenue lost. So we don't want to see that in the state. We know that President Trump ran on inflation. You start closing these restaurants and it start affecting the business, inflation is going to go through the roof.
You know, talking about that, you own several restaurants in Chicago with your family. You know, what are your concerns?
I know we talked about this many times. I mean, we definitely talk to the office, make sure we comply with the I-9, comply with law. We got to comply with law. You don't want to get in trouble. We got to comply with all the requirements of law. So we've done that, and we're hoping that everybody submits their documentation. We hope that someone has an order of deportation. That's what draws them into the restaurant, to the address, previous address where they live. So we're hoping that that the ICE dedicates, you know, kind of stick to what they said. Violent repeat offenders.
And as we've seen, sometimes that hasn't been the case. What has been your thought
for that? It's very sad. It's sad. And this is going to bring us to Comité de Cien. So we form a Comité de Cien. We're in over 25 states right now. We're branched off of ABEC, American Business for Immigration Coalition, with Rebecca Shee. She's kind of helped us organize it. So
what's the mission for that?
What's the mission? Number one is a bipartisan bill. I mean, bipartisan okay. Group. This group, we're over 118 members right now and over 25 states. There we got Republicans and Democrats to be able to work together and come to the middle. Okay, President Trump said it on his inauguration. He wants to bring common sense to the White House, common sense to immigration. Congress has failed for 40 years, on both sides of the party. But we know that not all the Democrats and not all the Republicans want to pass something. So we need both parties to work together to pass a common sense.
And what would that look like, would you say?
Well, right now, our number one goal is the Dreamers. There's 1.8 million Dreamers, over 600,000 registered for DACA. We heard President Trump say it twice, maybe three times, that the Dreamers should be citizens and belong here. That's a door he left open for us, and that's what we're working on. We will be in D.C. We have a conference on March 5th. We'll be in D.C. on the 24th and 25th, with hoping the 300 to 400 business, Latino, Mexican business owners, Mexican and Latino business owners, advocating, not screaming, not yelling. We don't want to be combative. We don't want to be argumentative. We just want to bring a case that the people who have been here for so long, for 30, 40 years, has been ignored.
I was going to mention that. What about the people who have been living here for decades
that are
undocumented?
Yeah, that's the next step. I mean, these are essential workers in our industry. People have families who have been paying taxes for 30, 40 years. And if you look at some of the cases that we have here, I mean, people come here with nothing. They give sweat, blood, some limbs, and end up with nothing.
Do you agree there should be something?
There should be something. And I believe that President Trump agrees also, because he's a business owner. He has hotels, restaurants, golf courses, and construction. Our people and people who've been in this country for 30, 40 years work side by side, hand to hand, with American citizens, not knowing if they're documented or non-documented, paying taxes and getting this country to move forward, you know, to a better economic status.
And Sam, I want to ask you one thing that we've noticed is when I headed to Little Village, there were some restaurant owners who were saying that, you know, they're losing business because people are not coming here. You know, what are your thoughts on collateral arrests?
Me, this is Jaime. Yes, about 25-30% of losses, revenue losses. It just doesn't affect Latino owners. It affects the whole supply chain. You mentioned something, you know, it's going to, because now restaurants are not consuming what they're supposed to. And keep in mind that Latinos don't own our own supply chain, so it's affecting everybody. You talk about a recess. It's going to be a recess in the economy here coming up soon because they're not consuming what they used to, and it's affecting the whole supply chain system. So it's devastating.
Is that what you're hearing from restaurant owners in the last couple weeks? You know, what is one of their main challenges?
Well, the main challenge is that this administration has installed fear in our community. People are not doing what they used to do before. So people just going under, you know, who's making money is just the food delivery companies and the drive-through companies that we don't own those companies. So, yes, it is affecting our businesses, but at the end of the day, it's affecting the whole supply chain system because we don't own our own supply chain. You know, we buy fruits and vegetables by some other groups. Our suppliers are not Mexicans or Latinos. And just to clarify one thing, undocumented immigrants come in all sizes and colors, not just Hispanics. And we feel that we've been singled out by this administration. It's just not fair.
Well, thank you both for your input, and thank you for joining us
tonight. Well, thank you for the opportunity.
We're back with more right after this. A local organization is empowering teens to change the narratives about their communities. We met up with the founder of an anti-violence initiative who turned his life around and is now giving young people opportunities he didn't have.
Hit record. Yep, hit record. All right, now we're recording. I'm going to let you know when to come in.
It's after school on a weeknight, and a group of students are working on a script.
Action, go.
They're all part of the organization Love City, a film production operation focused on youth violence prevention on the West Side.
When you're ready, hit record and get them the signal.
Here, students delve into the world of digital media, learning about film production, editing, photography, and acting.
What y'all got going on, man?
Our most important mission, to be inspirational. A lot of the violence comes from, like, hopelessness. Like, there's nothing to live for. So now you're not scared of nothing. If I'm feeling pain, you're going to feel pain. So we need to start healing some of that pain and start letting them know there's something for you to live for.
Andre Rodriguez, also known as Dre, is the founder of Love City. He says the organization was inspired by his desire to connect with his son after spending 10 years in prison.
It made me realize that I needed to change who I was, or else, you know, like, I'd spend the rest of my life in bad situations. So I started thinking about what I wanted to do with the rest of my life.
After his release at 39 years old, Rodriguez became a mentor for an anti-violence prevention program in Pilsen. There he noticed how smartphones played a role in connecting with youth.
So long story short, like, taught myself how to, like, shoot and edit music videos. And, you know, once we started putting those music videos out, now I had young people from different neighborhoods reaching out, trying to work with me. So that's when I knew I had something.
What started as an experiment grew into Love City. In 2022, Rodriguez received a state grant and moved the program to its own space in Garfield Park.
They know, like, here, they're heard. We hear them, we see what they're like, what kind of stories they want to tell, and then they see that develop into a short film, into a music video, into a podcast.
Giving participants like 16-year-old Isaiah Nieves opportunities to explore acting.
I look, he get inspired because, you know, he started off shooting off iPhone, you know, off a little iPhone. Now he got this big space with big cameras.
Or 14-year-old Leah Marquez to learn more about photography.
I also, not just photography, also we also did a design of clothing. And I really liked that because it gave me an opportunity I never thought I would have.
Thank you.
Programming is offered throughout the year, exploring topics from the emotions of a first date.
Cute. Yeah.
The struggles of drug addiction.
I'm not trying to go, bro. Sit back. I'm not trying to go. Where are you?
And gang violence.
So part of our job here to make these kids realize that what they have to say does matter, that they have, you know, a lot of potential.
Their projects challenge assumptions Rodriguez says people may have on their communities.
And I started thinking of myself, but outside of myself as a kid, and I felt bad for them. Like, I wanted to help them. That's the reason, like, why I guess I'm like, I got compassion for what other people are going through.
Great guy. On April 27th, the organization will showcase several of their short films at the AMC Gaylord Theater in Austin from 2 to 5 p.m. To learn more, visit our website. And that's our show for this Thursday night. And are you planning your weekend already? From a movie poster exhibition to a local book launch, we've got you covered with 5 arts and culture picks to check out this weekend. See the list on our website, wttw.com/news. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for the weekend review. Now, from all of us here in Chicago tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe. Buenas noches.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports free educational initiatives in the legal profession.